Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
On this edition of Into the Fray, I welcome on with me Terry Wendell. He is out of Rock Hill, South Carolina. And Terry, you say you've been researching about 15 years, and it's mostly solo, which I want to talk to you about, by the way, around Upper South Carolina and also in the Uwari National Forest in North Carolina. And I know that you've done speaking engagements, and as I just mentioned, you normally choose to research solo. Has it always been like that? And how often do you get admonished a little bit for researching in such a way?
No, well, yes and no. And by the way, it's a pleasure to be here. And I just enjoy talking about Bigfoot. So I hope your listeners will enjoy this. But in answer to your question, I started out with a group. I really got interested in this back when I was 7 or 8 growing up on my grandmother's farm, and I can give you the details on that as we go. But at some point in my life, about 15-ish years ago, I figured out, you know, I really want to do this. I'm at a point in my life where I know there's something out there because of what I've had previously happen. I want to know what it is, but it would probably make sense if I found some people who knew more than I did, because I'm a complete newbie at this, and, you know, just for safety's sake. So I did, for a good while, I was with a group called the Carolina Bigfoot Field Research Organization. That was from back around 2015 to 2018, and I found them online, contacted one of the members who was here in my South Carolina area. We kind of met at my house and discovered that neither of us thought the other was a crazed axe murderer and that we were probably safe going out in the woods with each other. So I got hooked up with them and another gentleman named David Pardue, who had been researching in the Uwari for many, many years. And the guy knows the trails. I think he could walk them blindfolded. But they had a lot of strange things happen up in the Uwari. And so that was what I call my very first official real Bigfoot research investigation that I went on with them. We actually had a rock thrown into camp that very first time, and we recovered that rock, and I have it on my desk, and we have a video of that rock being thrown into camp that is actually on my Rock Hill Bigfoot website. To my knowledge, that is the first time or the only video that is in existence of a rock being thrown into camp when the rock was recovered, and I had that rock. So that was my very first experience. It was not what I expected. I thought we were going to be out tromping through the woods in the middle of the dark, and that's not at all what happened. That's what happens on TV for the TV shows. But in reality, what I've discovered through my research with the CBFR folks, and then up to now, is you really don't have to do that. One of the easiest ways to do it is just go sit in the woods. Find a spot that you think might have activity or that has some reported sightings. go sit in the woods. We just always kind of joke and call it camping with a purpose. If nothing happens, hey, you had a good time sitting in the woods. I don't always do it by myself, and there are times when I just want to go see for myself what it is. I do let people know where I am, and it's always in areas where I'm comfortable. I have had things happen, and truly, now full disclosure, I have never seen one, but I have been close enough. I can tell you another story. If they wanted to hurt me, they had every chance, but they haven't. So you just kind of, before you go out by yourself, you really need to be confident in your woodsman skills and camping skills. I would not recommend that people just go wander off into the woods, because there are plenty of other things in the woods besides Bigfoot. And a lot of them have claws and teeth, and they think we would taste good with ketchup. So especially in this area, there are bears and cougars. You know, mountain lions are up in the Uwari, even though the Forestry Service says no, we've got video of them. So, yeah, that's one of those things that you just kind of have to decide on your own if you want to do that. But I would recommend anybody who just is starting out, try and find a group around you. Make sure they're a good, reputable group. You know, kind of do your homework, and they'll check you out if they're worth their salt as well. And that way you can kind of learn and see if this is for you. And the woods are creepy at night. They still creep me out sometimes. I will tell you that. So you just kind of got to get used to, you know, this is the way the woods are. And again, I grew up on a farm in my summertime at my grandmother's farm. So the outdoors was just kind of, oh, yeah, this is my playground. This is fun. So that's kind of where I am to now in a nutshell.
Now, that rock throw incident, was there other activity surrounding that situation as far as what you think was also Bigfoot activity?
Oh, yeah. The area that we were just at a campsite up in the Uwari, nothing special. The Uwari is up until Finding Bigfoot came out and did the episode up in the Uwari. There were sightings and activities up there all the time. You know, they were just all through there. After Finding Bigfoot, with all the popularity that generated, not so much for a long time. It got to the point up there you couldn't walk through the woods without stepping in a jar of peanut butter or something that people were just putting out everywhere. But they're coming back now after all it's died down. They're back up in the Uwari. There's strange things that happen up in the Uwari. I've seen some lights. I've heard some things. But as far as that particular night, we did hear activity out in the area, in the brush behind our camp. That particular campsite has been known in the past to be of particular interest to them, because it's in an area where they can easily get to. There's plenty of cover for them to observe us without being seen if they don't want to. And frankly, I think they're a lot of times as curious about us as we are about them. So we had heard that particular night, we had heard something in the woods, and then all of a sudden we're sitting there and we hear this clack, 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 thud. And there's the rock. And they're not throwing it at us, they're throwing it near us. I believe truly if they wanted to hit us, they could bean us anytime they wanted to, like a Major League Baseball pitcher throwing a fastball. But they don't. I think it's more of a, it could be a couple of things. It could be a, hey, we're here, just wanted to let you know. It could be there are other Bigfoot in the area, children, young, other juveniles that need to move. We're too close, so they throw a rock to distract us. You look where the rock lands. You're not looking where the others move. So that's kind of a diversionary tactic. Or it could just be you get the feeling sometimes with rock throws, it's a couple of the kids out in the woods going, okay, you see that guy over there? They're sitting by the campfire. I'm going to throw a rock and see what he does. Watch it. Oh, man, he's freaking out. Oh, he just dropped his hot dog. Okay. Stuff like that. So, you know, the Uwari, again, is a great spot. It's, again, I would caution, make sure before you just go wandering in the woods that you're confident of your abilities. Always let somebody know. I carry one of those InReaches with me wherever I go. Always let my wife know where I am. And I always have set up contact times. Even if I'm out of cell phone range, I can do it with the InReach. So, you know, it's just a word to the wise.
Yeah, David Pilates is giving you a high five right now because he always says that. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, and he, you know, I've watched a lot of that. I'm not sure all of that is Bigfoot. I think some of it could be. I really don't know. But at this point, better safe than sorry, because I want to come back and share what I've learned with others. And frankly, I want to come back.
Yeah, besides some of the strange things that it goes on in the woods, there's really scary freaking people out there.
That's my biggest fear, honestly. The woods don't scare me near as much as other people do. The times that we're living in now are much different than when I grew up, and could, you know, an 8-year-old kid could pack a ham sandwich after he finished his chores for the day and take off down to the creek by himself and spend the day just roaming around in the woods. Those days are sadly gone, I'm afraid.
That is for sure. And Terry, would you mind, you kind of mentioned that, especially in the Uwaris, it sounds like you've had some other experiences. You mentioned lights and then hearing kind of maybe other, quote unquote, other things out there. Would you mind touching on that stuff real quick?
No, not a problem. The light thing has always fascinated me. When I first got into this, I just thought Bigfoot was Bigfoot, lights were lights, UFOs were UFOs, aliens were aliens, and it was all compartmentalized. The more I get into this, the more I'm starting to see that that's not necessarily the case. There are crossovers. Been to one area in Alabama that it's basically the Skinwalker Ranch of the East Coast, and I it's amazing. But as far as the Uwari goes, I've seen lights that I can't really explain. They were not fireflies. The Uwari is famous for what are called blue ghost fireflies. Those are, if you've never seen them, they're different than normal fireflies. The females are blue, and the males are white, and they don't flash. They just kind of waft along. It truly looks like something out of the movie Avatar. If you remember some of those scenes there, the females fly low to the ground, and it's like a carpet of blue neon light that just kind of floats up the trails. So you have to be careful when you're out, and that's not something that everyone has seen before. It's gorgeous. I hope everyone has the opportunity to do that. But these were not those. Whatever these were higher up. They were not fireflies. They would go in and out of the trees. They would go up into the air. There's a meadow up in the Uwari that is famous for weird things. And they're not aircraft. I don't know what they are. And then they're just gone. They just start and then they're just gone.
And so you say it's a little higher up. So this wasn't really in amongst the trees like some of these lights are seen, right? Still up in the sky.
Some started in the trees and went up. Some came down into the trees. It's just, it's an odd thing. And there's all kinds of legends in the Uwari about the haints or the wild man of the woods or the old witch woman. So you got to wonder, you know, sometimes what's the basis for all of those? You know, there's strange things that are going on. And human beings truly, we do not pay attention. We are so tied up in our day-to-day stuff, or we're out camping, you know, we're cooking the hot dogs, or we're, you know, doing whatever we do. We truly do not pay attention to the small things. So that's one of the things I've kind of learned over the years, is you really need to just sit and be still sometimes, learn what belongs, and then it's easier to figure out what doesn't belong and maybe figure out what it is.
And what about some of the things that you've heard out there?
Oh, we've heard screams. I've heard howls. I grew up on a farm. I've spent a lot of time in the woods. I know what coyotes sound like. I know what bobcats sound like. A red fox will make a noise that, if you don't know what it is, will have you convinced there's an 800-pound monster about to run out of the woods and tear you apart. Even rabbits, you know, rabbits screaming. The screams that I have heard are, the scream parts are like a woman who is just screaming, but it's far louder and far longer with much more lung power than any human being could do. It's not a call blast. They're too random and they don't match. And besides, after a while being on YouTube, you know what all the standard call blasts that people used to use sound like. Truly, I don't know anybody that does call blasting a whole lot anymore. That's, you really don't know what you're saying when you're doing that. So I can't attribute it to any known creature that could be in the Uwari. So have I seen one do it and I can say that's a Bigfoot? No. But it matches with the other characteristics of other calls and screams that we have heard from other people who say, yeah, this is in a Bigfoot area as well.
Yeah, I Googled the Uwaris because I've talked about them before. I don't know which episodes, of course, but they've come up, obviously. And it's actually one of the oldest mountain ranges in North America. And this could attribute, obviously, anytime you have Native American sites, things can obviously go down. We've learned that in the past as well, that the Uwaris has more archaeological sites per acre than any other forest in the Southeast. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's really neat. A lot of times you can find Indian artifacts when or Native American artifacts when a tree falls over, the big old growth tree. That is where the Native Americans would sit a lot of times and do their stone napping under big trees. And you can find when trees fall over and the root ball comes up, they uncover a lot of artifacts that you can't just see laying on the ground. But yeah, there are all types of Native American legends, folklore. The people in the area refer to them as the wood boogers or just the boogers. If you talk to anybody of the old timers around the Uwari, you know, you'll hear stories about the boogers or don't whistle in the woods because you'll attract the boogers. Just all kinds of stuff like that. And even, you know, one lady that I talked to, an elderly lady, I was at a person's house researching something. They were having Bigfoot property or Bigfoot on their property. And I was up there. They had asked me and a couple other people to come investigate, and was talking to one of the neighbors. And she's just like, "Oh, honey, that's just them wood boogers. Don't worry about them. You just leave them alone. They won't bother you." It's incredible. And yes, that is one of the oldest mountain ranges in the United States. It's also the smallest national forest in the Forest Service forests. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting place. It's a fun place to just go, even if you're not into Bigfoot, it's a fun place to just go walk around. There's all kinds of flora and fauna, like I mentioned, like the blue ghost fireflies. That alone is worth making a trip or two in firefly season to see, because it is just gorgeous.
So you'd be walking through the Uwaris and you have maybe an arrowhead sticking out of the ground, and then next to it, a jar of peanut butter. And then you know exactly who's been through the woods at that point.
Yeah, the whole finding Bigfoot, I'm not trying to throw shade on anybody. My cohort, David Pardue, was former BFRO. He's actually the one that I think that alerted them to the activity in the area, and he regrets it to this day, because it just, all of a sudden, you know, of course sharing knowledge is a good thing, but it just, that area just got inundated with people stomping through the woods, yelling, screaming, whistling, call blasting, putting up game cameras, putting up any kind of pheromone sense that you could think of. You had people leaving pies in the woods. It was just overrun. I'm glad to see it coming back. And truly, you know, if I was a Squatch of any sense, I wouldn't have been within miles of there at that point. It just drove them all away.
I mean, I guess you can't blame people, though. You know, you get a location that's supposed to be very active. And I mean, if I had that around here, I'd be in my car. But yeah, I mean, I'm also guilty of that. I've been at a place and we're like, hey, we have some peanut butter, and there's only a couple of things that can open a peanut butter jar. So it's not a horrible idea, right?
No, absolutely. And truly, I don't mean to sound disparaging about that, because of course people are curious, and that's a good thing. But one thing you want to keep in mind is when we're in the woods, we're in their home. So you kind of need to be a little respectful. Respect goes a long way, I've learned with them. And, you know, if one person does it, yeah, it's not, okay, that's fine. If 10 people do it, okay. If 200 people go out and do it, that gets a bit much. So you kind of have to be thinking also, again, you know, I'm in their home. If somebody walked into my front yard that I didn't know and sat down and started laying out all the stuff that I considered trash or, you know, food or whatever, I don't know who you are. You're in my front yard. You're making me nervous. You need to leave. So, and I think that's where possibly a lot of the accounts that we hear of, you know, oh, Bigfoot ran us out of the woods. He threw rocks at us. He threw logs at us. He was screaming at us. Well, what were you doing? Did you get too close? You know, they travel, I truly believe they travel in clans or family units. Did you get too close to the kids? Are they now trying to move you back because they don't know who you are and you're too close to the family? Or let's say you're somewhere, you find a great fishing spot on this creek and you're pulling out trout left and right and you go to bed at night and all of a sudden, here's Mr. Bigfoot. He's coming for the groceries for the family for the night and you're in his way. So he wants you to move so he can get through, because if he goes home to Mrs. Bigfoot empty-handed, there's probably going to be trouble in the Bigfoot family. So again, just kind of start thinking, you know, what would I feel like if someone did this in my house? And again, just be respectful of the fact that you're not in your home, you're in their home.
How much do you know about that old witch woman that you mentioned? And it's okay if you don't know much about that, but are these more kind of offshoot stories that people kind of just mention? If you know anything about that, I'd love to hear about that legend and lore from the Uwaris.
I apologize. I do not know the details on that. There is a book that has legends of the Uwari. I don't remember the name of it. I don't have it as well. You can probably find it on Amazon. I know the Trading Post up in the Uwari National Forest sells it. They have several books there, but I do not have that one. But it is full of legends of just the area. And again, generally, legends are based on something.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just start up for no reason. You know, the whistling thing, a lot of times you hear the old timers tell people, well, don't whistle in the woods at night because you don't want to attract something. Bigfoot whistles. I have, you know, I've talked to people, they make a whistling noise. It's kind of quiet and they do it when they're close. And I don't know what it means. But if you're walking through the woods at night whistle, you could inadvertently attract a Bigfoot. And again, I don't know what the whistles mean. I don't know what they're saying. We can't sit down and ask Mr. Bigfoot, hey, what do you mean when you're saying this or doing this? But yeah, that's just one example of legends and how they get started.
Well, speaking of legends and stories, especially from this group of people, Native Americans talk about you got to respect the Bigfoot or they'll come in, they'll take the wives, they'll take the kids. Do you think that that's what Bigfoot does on occasion if they have the opportunity?
I think there are different clans of Bigfoot, and just like there are different people amongst humans, they act in different ways. You know, I'm familiar with the stories of the, you know, where they'll come in and raid the Indian camps, Native American camps, and, you know, carry off of people and things like that. And I remember the Bigfoot Wars. I cannot remember what particular nation it was that was at war with them. But I do think caution is a good thing, because anybody can have a bad day, even Bigfoot. So you probably, again, go into this with your eyes open. Don't be too presumptuous. And I'll tell you this, one of the things that I subscribe to, we've done, anybody that I research with or when I'm out by myself, if anyone that I'm with or with the group says, I'm feeling weird. I don't know what's going on. I'm feeling weird. We don't need to be here. We leave. No questions asked. We leave. Because again, you know, that little voice in the back of your head, when you get in trouble is when you don't listen to that little voice. And so better safe than sorry. We'll come back another day. It may be we're too close to something. It may just be that we're not supposed to be there. So, you know, we're not welcome. So we just leave.
So in that case, do you think that that is just some kind of a primal instinct in that person kicking in? Or is that possibly a level of infrasound that you can't hear? Or is that just totally something else? Maybe that's not even Bigfoot.
I don't think the infrasound part, that's usually referred to, I think, as zapping. I have never been zapped, and I haven't talked to anyone who has, but that usually is described more as just an incredible sensation of fear. You're nauseous, you're dizzy, your fight or flight is kicking in and you got to run. But I've personally had an experience that was nothing like that, but it was more like I was getting an electrical charge through my body, and turned out I was too close to something. I can tell you about that if you want to.
Yes, please.
That just happened. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll just jump into that. I was up in upstate South Carolina, up about as far as the northwest of South Carolina as you can go, right where the little edge of the pie is there. And I was actually speaking at a Bigfoot conference or a Bigfoot festival there. And the festival heads had put us up, all the speakers, in a very nice house that was up in this little tiny town up in the corner of South Carolina. And it was a very nice place. We hung out there. And of course, we're Bigfoot investigators. After the festival's over the first night, I and another gentleman I know, his first name is Michael. I've known him for a good while. And we were two of us and a couple of others were standing around and looked up and it's like, oh, there's a trail going into the woods right in our backyard. We're done with the festival. All right. And I just looked around and said, I'm going for a walk. Anybody up? And now, no flashlight, no thermal, no nothing. I'm just going to go walk in the woods. And I hear Michael from behind me go, well, Terry is clearly crazy, but I'm going to go with him. So we just walk off into the woods down this trail. Never been there before. And it's probably about 12:30 at night. And so we get down a little ways away from the house, and the trail dips down further away from us, probably about 50 yards, and then rises back up. So you can't see what's in that dip. And the moon is just coming up, and it's coming through the trees. So you can see a little bit, but not a great deal. And so Michael and I are walking down the trail, and we kind of stop and, you know, just start listening. And the dogs, you hear this pack of dogs go off on one end of the trail way away from us. The trail itself runs from east to west with the house at the eastern end. So we're walking away from the house. And down towards the western end of the trail, wherever the trail goes, we hear this pack of dogs just go off. And dogs have different barks. If you've learned to listen to them, they have the I don't know what you are bark. They have the I'm here bark. They have the you're scaring me bark. And they have the you're not supposed to be here. I'm going to eat you up bark. Well, these started off with the I don't know what you are bark. You're something and I don't know what you are and you're here. And progressed to a little higher degree of urgency. Then we heard a pack of dogs on the eastern end of the trail go off way up above the house. They were doing the same thing. And then we start hearing in between the dogs, we hear some howls. Again, I know what coyotes sound like, and these were not them. And Michael and I both looked at each other, and it's like, dude, that's a Squatch. That's a Squatch. And I mean, we're in the woods in the middle of the trail just giggling like girls, like, wait, I know what that is. That's a Squatch. This is cool. I know what that is. So we're standing there, and it goes on and back and forth, and we stand there for a little longer. It kind of dies down over the course of about an hour. The howls die off, and the dogs calm down, and it's like, well, they were moving, looking for food or going from a water source to another, and they're done now. So nothing's going to happen. So we stood there a little longer. But before we left, while all this was going on, we noticed that there was a shadow down in the dip of that trail that we did not think had been there before. It appeared to be a head and shoulders, but again, it's dark. You know, you can see light grays and dark grays and blacks, and that's it. So we're standing up at the far end of the trail from this dip, and I said, do you see anything down in that dip? He said, yeah, it looks like a shadow, and I don't think it was there before. I said, okay. We're backlit from some of the moon and the light coming from the house. Let's move back and forth a little bit and see if the shadow moves, just to see if it's us. Well, it didn't move, so okay, that's not us. We stood there for a little longer and noticed off to the right there were two trees that were right off the path. Michael was standing beside of me, and he said, those trees about 20 yards in on your 11 o'clock. I said, yeah, I think I see something there. Looks like an outline. He said, that's what I thought too, just wanted to see. We looked at it for a minute, and I said, I'm seeing eyes. He said, yep, I am too. They were kind of an orangish yellow. They did not blink. So I don't know what it was. It was far enough off the ground that I don't think it certainly wouldn't have been a possum or anything like that, or, you know, bobcat. There was no light to reflect off of them where it was. It was a glow, not an eye shine. And I said, okay, this is interesting. So we just kept standing there watching to see what would go on. The dogs were still going back and forth. And then, you know, as I said, the dogs quieted down. Both shadows went away. The eyes went away. So it's like, okay, well, we're done for the night. So we went back and didn't say a whole lot to anybody, because we're thinking, yeah, we're Bigfoot researchers at a Bigfoot festival, and we just had something happen. Yeah, right. They're going to believe us. Well, come to find out, they had put us in this house because they had had reports of activity nearby. They told us that the next day when we went in and talked to them, and they were like, well, yeah, we just kind of wanted to surprise you and see what would happen. We didn't want to preload you, but obviously there's something going on. So at that point, it was on. We were there for one more night. The festival was over at that point. All we had to do was get up and leave the next morning. So I looked over at Michael when we got there and I said, you up for another one? He said, let's go. So about that same time of night, we walked down into on the trail, and still had not had a chance to walk the trail in the daylight. So we did that the next morning, made some interesting discoveries. But we walked down this trail, got to about the same point that we were before. The dog started up about the same time again. Same behavior, same howls. So it's like, oh yeah, this is a pattern. They're moving from one spot to the other for whatever reason in a group. This is what's going on. I've seen this. Both of us have seen this before in other places. Saw the same shadow appear down in the dip of the trail again. Saw the same shadow appear over off the side of the trail before. And I said, okay, I want to get closer. I want to see what this is, see what happens. So I started walking up. Michael was following me. And we got to a point where all of a sudden, this is going to sound kind of crazy, but as a kid, if you've ever touched your tongue to like a 9-volt battery on a dare or something, you get just a little bit of tingle in your tongue. That's what this felt like. It started in the center of my chest and radiated out over a couple of seconds into my arms and legs and all my extremities. And I'm standing there, and this has never happened to me before anywhere. So I'm thinking, what in the heck is going on? And Michael's standing beside of me, so I just kind of, you know, lean over and say, bro, I got something weird going on. I'm feeling a little weird. And he said, electricity? And it was like, oh, crap, you got it too? He said, yep. I said, okay. This is interesting. I said, let's do something. Let's back up and see what happens. So he said, okay, I'm with you. So we just kind of didn't turn around. We just kind of backed up about, I don't know, 7 or 8 paces, maybe 10. And like a switch, it went away. I said, okay, I'm going to try something else. You stay here. I'm going to walk up and see if it happens again. But before I did, I just kind of said to the woods in the dark, okay, guys, we felt that. If you're out there, we don't mean any harm. We don't mean any disrespect. We're just kind of curious. I'm going to take a few steps forward again. And if we were too close and that was your way of telling us to back up, do it to me again and we will back up. I give you my word and we won't bother you. The other guy's going to stay here. I'm going to walk forward. So I walked up to the same spot that we had been previously when it started. Like a switch, there it was again, electricity all through my body. So I just said out loud, okay, we get it. We're too close. I'm going to back up. We won't bother you. I got back to where Michael was still standing. I said, did you get anything? He said, nothing. I said, okay, that's kind of verifiable. I don't know what it was or what was doing it, but that's something that's definitely verifiable. So we'll just stand here and see what happens. And, you know, the rest of the next, I guess, 30 minutes or so, the same routine from the night before went on. Dogs went off east and west, heard some howls, and then it died down about 30 minutes after that. And it's like, okay, well, we're done again. This was really cool. So we walked back into the house, and everyone else had gone to bed, so we really didn't say anything. We just told them about it the next morning. But that was one, I got nothing. Nothing in nature that I know of could do that. So I just, you know, and truly, this is another one of those things I tell people, if I hadn't been there and had it happen to me, I wouldn't believe me either. I don't blame you if you don't believe me. And truly, it's okay if you don't. But it happened. It's verified. And we actually found the next morning, we went out the morning that we were going to leave, Michael and I went out and walked the trail, found out that there is a river right down at the end of the trail. And they were apparently traveling the rivers. We also found there was in the spot where we saw the shadow in the dip of the trail, there was nothing down there that would account for any shadow that we could find. And the shadow off to the side of the trail, where we saw the eyes, we found what appeared to be a bedding site or a site in the leaves and the foliage where something had been that was big. It could have been a deer. It could have happened the previous night or the night before or the morning after we left had gone out, or, you know, I don't know. But it would have been at about the right place for something large with a head and eyes on top of its shoulders to sit and watch. So that was kind of interesting. And again, that's the first time that has ever happened to me. And it was kind of interesting. I had to call a Native American friend of mine and go, okay, what just happened on this? Is there something I need to know? And she said, no, you were just being respectful and, you know, you're fine. You were too close. You were respectful. No big deal. So that was an interesting one. That was my most recent one.
Yeah, on the latest Patreon video chat I had on David Sidoti, he's a researcher out of Florida, and he and two other researchers were in a certain area, and not only did they have this area of high electrical charge, this feeling, the temperature, maybe they had gotten, you know, maybe a little closer than you did. I do wonder if you had kept going. You probably do too, but good that you backed up. But anyway, he had a massive temperature drop in this area as well. They all experienced that. So definitely something strange going on.
And that wouldn't surprise me. I have the Native American friend that I spoke with about this said, yeah, she has them on her property. She actually grew up with them. So to her, it's just like a part of the world. She's seen them. She's got a family group living there. But she said, yeah, we've had people out here who, you're walking through the woods and you get to this one spot and all of a sudden you're overcome with laughter. You have no idea why. Everybody just starts laughing. She said they can do all kinds of things. I've never had that happen either. But yeah, the whole temperature thing, that would not surprise me. I've heard reports of that as well. My thing is, again, with the respect, if you don't want me there, I'm not going where I'm not wanted. You know, you're telling me stay back. I'm going to respect that. That's kind of how we get along, you know?
Yeah, you'd think more people would do that when you're dealing with something, you know, that could be upwards of 800 or more pounds, but that's just me. I don't know.
Me as well.
So the whole self-illuminating eyes thing, right? Because you kind of mentioned that, of course, there was a moon out, so maybe that's part of this and you can address that. But you purposely said you didn't have flashlights, there wasn't any light out here. How do you parcel out the reports of and you seeing yourself self-illuminating eye shine, or not eye shine, but just eyes, rather?
Yeah, I actually try to call it eye glow. Eye shine is more what happens when you shine a flashlight,
right,
or an illumination source into another animal's eyes.
Yeah, that was
eyes.
A misspeak there. Yeah, it's the exact opposite of that. That was my question, yeah.
Yeah, and this is just something, you know, I've seen it before. I've seen white eye shine. I was in Georgia with some folks, had one walk through our camp that at first I thought was someone with a headlamp walking in amongst the tents, but it wasn't, because if it was a headlamp, it would have had to have been 8 feet up, and it was very well defined. It was not casting light. So the whole self-illuminating thing, I really struggle with that. I don't know. I've seen it. I don't know the mechanism behind it, because you would think that something, if I could illuminate my eyes, how could I see? Because I'm blinding myself. But, you know, that's another one I got to shake my head at and go, I don't know, but I've seen it. And I don't know. I have actually had an experience in Georgia up on a ridge where I had something happen called flashlight eye shine. Had never heard of that before, didn't know what that was, but we were up on a ridge scouting out an area for further research. We had about 5 or 6 people in the group, and this was in an area of known activity. During the night, I woke up. I was in a tent. Most of the other people were in hammocks hanging off the edge of this ridge because there wasn't a whole lot of flat space. I woke up in the middle of the night. One of the things I learned as a Boy Scout is when you wake up in the middle of the night in the woods, lay still for a minute and try and figure out why you woke up. Is it that you need to answer the call of nature, or is there an animal outside making noise that you need to be aware of and take action about, or, you know, what's going on? So I was laying there and just listening to the wind. I saw on the wall of my tent what appeared to be a flashlight or a headlamp kind of flickering around back and forth. At the time, I was tired because it had been a hike. We had to climb up about a 30-degree cliff to get there, and I was whooped. And so I was laying there, and I was beat, and I just thought, well, it must be somebody out, you know, answering a nature call or something, and they're just kind of walking around with the headlamp on, no big deal. So I went back to sleep, didn't think anything else of it. And we all packed up on that. That was also the same time I got gifted a walking stick that was woven into my backpack on the next morning. It was outside my tent.
Oh.
That was a fun one. But we got back to camp, and we had to kind of hustle on out because our ride was going to pick us up at the pickup point, and we didn't want to keep them waiting too long. So we really didn't discuss much of anything about that previous night amongst ourselves. We were just hustling to get out of the woods to get to the pickup point. We got back to the base camp. We're sitting around, and everybody had gotten cleaned up a little bit, had a meal. And I said, so, by the way, who was out of the tent last night with the flashlight? Turned out nobody was out of their tent. Everybody said, what are you talking about? And I told them, and everybody said, no, it wasn't us. We weren't out. One guy, my buddy David, did say, he was with me on this one, and he was in his hammock. He did say, well, I wasn't going to say anything, but before I went to sleep, he could see from where he was. He had a clear view. We were on top of this, like I said, on top of this ridge, and he had a clear view off of the ridge to, oh my gosh, probably into the next state almost. He could see the sky, and he said, I saw 3 red lights that sort of headed across the sky, and they looked kind of weird, but I didn't think anything of it and went to sleep. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. But it took me a couple of weeks later, I talked to another friend of mine about the eyeshine part. And I said, what could that have been? And she said, that is a thing that's very rare. It's called flashlight eyeshine, where they can actually light up an area with their eyes. It looks like a flashlight. Very few people have ever seen that. So consider yourself very lucky, and you got a gift from whoever it was, because that sounds like exactly what you saw.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's really unique. I don't know if I've ever heard of that. The flashlight eye shine.
It's
imagine
rare.
Actually like seeing it full on, like a beam coming out of their eyes. I think, I don't know. That would be a little on the freaky side to me. I don't know.
It wasn't like a laser. It wasn't defined. It was just like a diffused glow from that you'd get from a flashlight.
Right.
But it is apparently incredibly rare. Very few people have even heard of it.
I mean, if they can, you know, make their eyes essentially quote unquote glow, and throw maybe others, just like some people are better at things like remote viewing. That's a real thing. I say it all the time. People laugh at psychics and this and that, but remote viewing's real. Look it up. The military has used them. You know, maybe it's just tantamount to some people can use more parts of their brain. I've said this many times, blah, blah, blah. People are sick of me saying this, but maybe that particular Bigfoot that was able to throw that beam just has, he's just better at doing things like that than the other Bigfoot.
And I do believe that. I think there are differences, just like there are differences in people. I think they might have different abilities. You know, again, the sad part of this is we don't have the opportunity to sit down and say, so Mr. Bigfoot, tell me about this eyeshine thing. How does that work? We don't know. There, as far as I know, there are no instances in known creatures to be able to do that, to illuminate your own eyes. And again, if you could, how could you see at night? I do not understand the mechanism behind that, but I've seen it, and I've got no explanation. I don't know.
I mean, look what happens. I mean, we are not built to be in the woods anyway, let alone even during the days, let alone at night. We're just like, we're ridiculous. It's horrible. But the second you take a monocular, any night vision, and put it up to that eyeball, you're done for. I mean, you better stick with that thing, because you're waiting another 20 minutes until it gets back to status quo for your quote unquote night vision.
Yeah. And that's a lot of times, truly, I don't own night vision. I have one camera. It's an old handy cam that it's a Sony camera and does Sony night shot. I use that just kind of for sitting around documenting things in camp. But I don't really use that anymore. You know, I probably should have a monocular or something. But again, you use that, you've blown your night vision for at least 30 minutes. And I truly believe they can see in IR. I've seen a picture that pretty much would prove that. There's a photo of one. It's an eyeball looking at a camera. Somebody that I know up in the Uari had that photo. The camera was about 10 feet up in a pine tree. And there is something. The only way I can explain it is a middle-aged chimpanzee. You see the eye, you see just a little bit of the nose, you can't see the ear. But it's whatever it is looking into the camera that's you know 9 or 10 feet up in this tree, and the camera has gone off, so the IR illuminator has fired. And one of the things that I've learned over the years from a couple of people is when you're looking at photos, okay, what can we learn from this photo? Let's look at this. Let's just not take it at face value. You know, turn it upside down. There was a photo going around for a while that was supposedly a Bigfoot looking at a trail cam, and it turned out it was an upside down view of a cougar or a cat or something. And if you flip it upside down, you can see exactly what it is. Mm. But in this particular one, I noticed, and some other people as well with me noticed, that the pupil in the eyeball was constricted. So normally when we're in the woods and you film a human being with IR, you get that great big puppy dog look where the irises are really, really just wide open because you're trying to get in all the light you can. So that tells me that whatever this was saw the flash go off and their eye reacted to it. So that means that if this was a Bigfoot, which I believe it was, that means they can see an IR. So your IR stuff's got, that's like a beacon to them. You know, it's like, here I am, stay away from me. Thermal probably does a little better. But even that, you know, at this point, I don't bother with a whole lot of that. I want to know what they are. I want to meet them. I want them to come up close, call me crazy, but I want to know what these guys are.
Well, yeah, and the more that you're holding, the more red flags probably go up in their mind. I think they know what a gun is. They can identify those things, the bang sticks. But I would imagine that is a good way to go about things.
Oh, yeah. And I think, was it Ivan Sanderson in his book maybe described about hunting behavior? If you're out in the woods and you hold a camera up to your eye, what does that look like? It looks like a gun. You're aiming something. So, you know, don't do that. They know when we have guns. I don't know if they can smell them, sense them. I don't know. You know, frankly, I think they know from the minute that we step out of our car that we're in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how. But again, if you know, think of it as your home. If, you know, somebody walked up in your yard, you would notice. If somebody hangs a game camera out in the woods, well, imagine that somebody walks into your house when you're not there and hangs a new picture on your wall that you didn't put there. You're going to see that picture as soon as you get into that room when you come home. It's the same with them. You know, we're in their home. So we need to learn to think that way.
Is that eyeball photo a private photo?
It is, and I'm sorry, and
I almost didn't
want to talk about it because it is.
No, that's okay. I just have to make sure to mention that because people will ask.
Yeah, it's from a trusted source. He's not ready to disclose it yet because he wants to kind of keep that area to himself, just so he doesn't get hoaxed or pranked or anything, and just doesn't have a bunch of people running through it, but... You know, he shared it with me and a couple of other folks that we know each other pretty well. Unless there is a large chimpanzee living up in the mountains of North Carolina, this is another one where this is not an upside down panther, cougar, whatever, mountain lion, or possum looking over the top of the thing. It's something looking at eye level into this camera. And it looks for all the world like the eye socket. You can see a bit of the brow ridge. And again, you can see just a little bit of where the nose starts. You can't see an ear, but you can see where the ear starts. The only thing I got is it's a chimpanzee or a Bigfoot. You can see the hair on the face, on the cheek. The areas around the brow ridge and the eye socket are bare. You can see the skin. So, you know, it's one of two things. It's a chimpanzee that's out in the woods, or it's a Bigfoot.
Well, and honestly, Terry, I don't blame the guy, even if he never shares it, because nothing good comes from sharing a photo. You just get hammered. I have a photo on my phone from the time that I was at the Brown property, and it was when we were out in their backyard, and there's this brush that's like at least 8 or 9 feet tall, right? And we had been taking some photos, and in one of the photos, there is what looks to be the head of a massive ape-like creature. You can see, like you said, sockets, brow, you can see a tapered head and hair. And every time I've shared it, it hasn't been much because I've learned my lesson. Someone goes, oh, it's a beaver's ass, and I'm like, it's a flying beaver? 10 feet in the air mooning us? I don't think so. Like, people don't read
really
a caption. And I'm like, guys, this is not ground brush. I had to stand on a chair on my tippy toes with my hand in the air to because we saw it soon after it had been taken. It was the middle of the day. And Sarah's like, check this out. And we went out there to try to recreate the height. And it was me on my tippy toes with my hand so we could find the exact spot in this quote unquote ground brush, which it wasn't, where this beaver's ass was, which it wasn't. So, I don't blame the guy for not sharing, because you're just setting yourself up for a hair pulling out session.
Oh, absolutely. And I know people, the same thing, you know, what's going to happen? You get a great video. Oh, it's too good. It's too clear. It's fake.
Mm-hmm.
You get another one or another picture. It's blurry. Oh, you can't see anything. It's blurry. So you're just,
you can't win.
I truly don't have a lot of things posted on my social media stuff for Rock Hill Bigfoot, just for that reason. You can't win. No matter what you do, you can't win. I don't have time for that. I want to be in the woods figuring out what's going on. So anything that I shoot is mainly for me to keep up with what I'm doing and to document things for me, you know, and I'll share it with people that I know, but I got no interest. Truly, I got no interest in being the guy on the cover of Time magazine shaking hands with Mr. Bigfoot. I don't care about that. I don't need that. I want to know what's going on. I want to know what these guys are. I'm curious. You know, I want to know.
Terry, would you mind talking about some of the interesting incidents that happened to you during summers spent on your grandmother's farm in upstate South Carolina?
Sure, I'll be happy to. Let me tell you the one that got me going. Now, this was back in the, I guess, late 60s or very early 70s. I was probably about 8 years old. My grandparents, this is a generational farm. It's truly about 2,000 acres in upstate South Carolina. It's anybody that lived on it or around it was family or friends of family, so we all knew each other. There's plenty of woodland. There's old growth woodlands on this farm. There's pulpwood. That was one of the crops that we harvested. There was pulpwood. You had cultivated land. You know, the family garden plot was a couple of acres. There are three springs, two ponds, four creeks. It's adjacent to a major river in the area. There's all kinds of food sources here. You know, you've got not to mention cultivated farmland. You've got wildlife. You know, you couldn't walk out and not see a deer at that time. There were turkeys or wild pigs or bobcats or foxes. You name it. It was on this land. So this is a Bigfoot paradise, which I didn't realize as an eight-year-old kid because I didn't know what Bigfoot was. It was a kid's paradise who loved the woods because, again, I could, you know, my chores were done. So I'd just go, you know, Mom, I'm going to go down to the creek and cool off. My chores are done. Okay, well, be back before the sun goes down. Be back an hour before sun goes down because you know what happens if we have to come looking for you. And it's like, yes, ma'am. So this one particular time, I took off on a walk. I was doing that. And again, I'm about 8 years old. And there's a farm road that's cut down from the house that I was staying in. We called it the home house because that was the original house back when my great grandfather, or I think originally started farming there. You know, it's a typical house, farmhouse, old farmhouse, wraparound front porch, no screens on the windows, no air conditioning. Every room was heated with a pot-bellied stove. But, you know, back then it was fun. It was an adventure. I was 8 years old. So I'm walking down this road from the home house that goes down to this one creek. As I go further into the woods, and let me preface by saying, anytime I would go into the woods here, I would always get this feeling that I wasn't alone. That it wasn't a creepy feeling like something was going to hurt me. It was just like if I turned around quick enough, I'd see somebody duck behind a tree or somebody duck down behind a hill or something. And I didn't really understand what it was about. It was just like, I don't know what this is, but nothing's ever bothered me. So I'm just, this must be what it feels like to be me in the woods. So I'm walking down this road and I got that feeling again, but it's like, okay, nothing's ever happened before. So I get a little ways down the road, and off to the side, there's a pine tree. It's a young pine tree, probably about as big around as your leg, maybe. It's snapped off about 7 or 8 feet up. And I looked at it, and I thought, well, that's kind of odd. Nothing else is snapped off around here, and we hadn't had any storms, and we're in the middle of the woods. But, okay, things happen. Trees fall or break, I guess. Okay. So I'm walking on down, and I get a little further, and I find another one exactly like that. And it's like, well, okay, this is a pattern. Okay. So I get a little further down the road, and I find a third one, except this one is pulled up by the roots with the root ball still on it, snapped off and stuck in the ground upside down with the root ball still on top of it. At that point, something kicked in and said, maybe I don't need to go to the spring today. I'm not sure why, but I think I'm going to go back to the house. This is just a little too weird, and I don't know what's going on. And again, that little voice in the back of your head is going, nope, you don't need to be here. So I turned around and walked back to the house. And again, had no idea what was going on until about 1972, when The Legend of Boggy Creek came out. That was about, I guess, 12 or so then, and that scared the bedoobers out of me, because the wraparound porch or the front porch that they had was exactly like my grandmother's front porch. And, it took me several years after that movie to go into the woods, let alone sit on a couch by a window downstairs in front of the porch. It really kind of freaked me out. But at that point, I guess it took a couple of years, and at that point it was like, nothing has hurt me out here yet, and I really like being in the woods. It's just fun. So I got to get over this. So back then there was no internet. I'm that old. We had these things called books, and you had to read them to find out stuff. And at that point in time, there really wasn't a whole lot about Bigfoot. So I started, anything I could, I started reading. The Patterson-Gimlin film came out. I saw that, and it was like, okay, but, he's out west in the Oregon and stuff. He's not here because he's just one Bigfoot, like the Loch Ness Monster. He just travels around. He couldn't possibly be here. And then the more you found out, it's like, oh, there's not just one of them. they're everywhere. And they travel anywhere they want to go. And frankly, I've learned it's surprising how little cover they need, because, again, we don't pay attention. But that's kind of what started the whole thing out. That got me going, and I've just, all through my life, I have been fascinated by what is this? I don't know what it is. I got to learn more about this. I don't know why, but I am just absolutely curious about this. And, my wife says, well, what are you going to do if you ever do see one, or, you get your answers? And I said, I don't know. At that point, I may retire. I don't know. This is just a kind of a quest for knowledge. And I got to give a shout out to my wife, by the way. She is absolutely wonderful. We've only been married for about 8 years, and she's going to hit me for telling the story. But before we got married, I sat her down and I said, sweetie, I want you to know something. Before we get married, I got to tell you something. It's pretty serious, and I understand if this changes things. And she's sitting across the supper table looking at me, and I said, sweetie, I need you to know this. I'm a Bigfoot investigator. And there was this pause for a second, and I thought, well, I'm done. And she looked at me and went, is that all? You were some kind of crazed axe murderer, or were on the run from the law, or that's all? Oh, my gosh. That's interesting. That's so interesting. I want to know more.
That's a good woman right there. Because sometimes
she's definitely a keeper.
We do get looked at like we're just real cuckoo people.
Oh yeah. And again, that's one of the things I try to. There are all kinds of opinions about what Bigfoot is. There are as many opinions as there are people to have them. I try my best not to poo-poo anybody. based on what I've seen, you know, there's always room to learn something. It's kind of like mind speak. You hear people talk about mind speak, Bigfoot talk to me in my head. I've never had that happen to me before. However, I've only lived in this one head all my life. How do I know what happens in your head? I don't. So just because it's never happened to me, I can't say it doesn't happen. So I do try and stay a little bit open-minded about that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, and it goes back to what we were talking about before about my ad nauseum comment about them having, some of them having extra abilities. And some people are like that. Well, if you get extra over here and extra, you know, over here, and then they're both in the woods, who knows what they could accomplish together? Maybe they can mind speak to each other. Who knows?
I think they can do that somehow. I think they have a way to communicate with each other that we don't understand. You know, the Native American folks will tell you that they can do things like cloud people's minds so that we don't see them, or that they have one foot in this world and one foot in the spirit world. And I think there's something to that. I don't quite understand all of it, you know, and I've not had those experiences with the mind speak or anything. But who are we to say? I don't know. You know, there are no experts in this.
Amen to that. I also say that ad nauseum. So yeah, that is 100% true. Now, I know you've been to speaking engagements, and which means you're probably sitting at a table all day and talking to folks, or maybe you had this question during one of your talks. What is your response when someone asks, why haven't we found a body yet, or a part of a body? Why haven't we found bones?
It's a good question. And yes, I do get asked that a lot. That's the second question second only to the number one question I get asked is, what do you think Bigfoot is? Mm-hmm. But that's a very good question. Firstly, let me offer this. If you're not familiar with how quickly a deer carcass will degrade and disintegrate in the woods, it's very, very impressive to see that. There's several films out where people have shot videos where they just left a carcass out and either chained it down or cabled it down or something so that it can't be drug off by a predator, and just put a time-lapse camera on it and see how quickly all that degenerates into nothing. It does not take long at all. Now, I'm going to get a little bit into the conspiracy world here. I'm going to dip my toe in that water. I think that we already have. If you get to know some of the park rangers and get to know them really well, they'll tell you, yeah, they're here. We know about them. But I don't think that it is, I don't think we're going to know that as common knowledge for a good while, because think about this. What happened with a little tiny owl out in California that turned out to not even be indigenous to that area? It shut the logging industry down. So what's going to happen if we wake up tomorrow and see on the national news, Bigfoot is real, it's confirmed, here are pictures, it's a real deal? What's going to happen to the national forests? The people that take the big Winnebagos and spend a bunch of money to take their kids out and go camping for a week or two at a time, that's going to dry up because they are going to freak out. The next thing that's going to happen is you're going to have every Yahoo that can hold a rifle or a shotgun tromping through the woods because they want to be the first person to bag them a Bigfoot. And they're going to shoot at anything that moves. They're not real discriminating about what they shoot at. So that's going to start up. I don't think that's a scenario that we want to see going on in our forests. It bothers me enough if I'm out somewhere and you don't know who's out hunting or poaching or whatever, and you could run into somebody, because there are people that will shoot at anything that moves and go, oh, well, darn, I hit a person. Well, oh, oops, okay. So I think the people who we would otherwise be trying to prove that Bigfoot is real to already know that Bigfoot is real. So that's why I say I'm not concerned with proving that he's real to anybody else. I want to know from me.
But Terry, have you heard some unfortunate incidents where either they're minding their own business, fishing, hiking, hunting, whatever, or they were out looking for Bigfoot and they had that confirmation experience and it was utterly terrifying. And then, unfortunately, they don't go in the woods for years and years, or maybe never again.
Oh, yeah. And again, growing up as a kid, that's I can relate to that absolutely. You know, again, for 2 years, it took me a while to come to terms with there is something in these woods. It's a whole lot bigger than me. It's a whole lot stronger than me. It could snatch me up anytime it wants to. And I don't know what this is, and it freaks me out. I can completely understand, you know, the hunters that are out in the tree stand and see one walk through. My wife actually has a cousin who has had an instance like that. Didn't know that what I did, and we just happened to talk to each other, and he was like, "Oh my gosh, I got to tell you this." Yeah, he was out and he was out hunting and had one walk under his tree stand and just kept going. And he said the freakiest part was it walked up the trail that he had to go to get to his truck. So he sat there for hours and it completely freaked him out so badly so that when he got down out of his tree stand, he left everything there. He dropped his rifle, left it there, ran up the trail, got in his truck and took off. And it was 2 days later, he had to get a friend to go with him to recover his rifle. So yeah, I absolutely sympathize with those people. If you don't know what this is, don't expect it and don't believe in it. And then all of a sudden it's thrown right in your face. Your brain is going to do everything it can to convince you that that didn't happen because it's trying to protect you. And then you're sitting there arguing with yourself internally going, but I saw it. I saw this. I saw this. I don't care what you're saying. It happened. So there's a big conflict there. And that, again, that happened to me when I got poked in my shoulder in the tent. I had that kind of moment. So I can totally relate to that. You know, and again, anybody can have a bad day. You could have gotten into a family clan where they had just had a squabble or where you're too close to the kids or you're in their hunting area. So, you know, I can absolutely sympathize with those people. I would ask them as a way of kind of healing themselves is try and learn more about what this is. And did anything hurt you before? Because I promise you, these things could squash us like bugs anytime they wanted to. I have been close enough where that could have happened to me on several occasions, but it hasn't. And again, you could run into somebody who Mr. and Mrs. Bigfoot just had a squabble. The kids are just being, you know, just absolute demon children, and he's just had a bad day. So it's probably not wise to antagonize things. A lot of people ask me, well, what do I do if I see one? I said, well, that's up to you. And the first thing you need to do is let Bigfoot decide what is going to happen. Just like if you're walking on a trail and you round the corner of a trail and all of a sudden there's a big black bear in front of you, I would hope your first thought would not be, oh, let's go take pictures of the bear. Let's go pet the bear. No, you're probably going to stand there and go, okay, what's happening next? Typically, with bear behavior, bears don't want to be around us. They'll leave. So at that point, second suggestion is don't follow him. Don't chase him. Let him leave. If you have an encounter and Bigfoot hangs around, then you got some choices to make. And it depends on that little voice in your head. If something says, I'm freaked out, leave, leave. Don't ask any questions. Turn around and leave. If you want to stick around and observe a little bit, be respectful. You're in their house. Don't approach them. Let them call the shots. And if they want to leave, let them leave. And again, you know, the whole camera thing, if you raise something up in front of your face, that's hunting behavior. So be careful about that.
Well, you mentioned it. So why don't we close it down with the coup de grace, shall we? The tent incident.
That was a life changer for me, I promise. I was in North Georgia with some friends of mine, and my Native American friend was there with me. And these are all people that I knew really well. We were in a remote campground, campground only in name because it had a fire pit and a bear box. But to get to this place, you had to drive on a switchback road down into a holler, which if your listeners are not familiar with the term holler, that is a valley or low spot in between usually two ridge lines. And this is a little, barely a one-lane road that you're driving into. You have to drive across one creek to get to the parking area and then pack your stuff in across a bridge over another creek to get to the camping area. So, yeah, it's a campsite, but it's pretty remote. So one of the things I do when I go camping is I always take a trash bag with me because there's always trash and litter because people are nasty and don't pay attention and are disrespectful. So I always pack out other people's trash and kind of, you know, not just leave no trace, but leave it a little better just because people are just people. And so I had my little tent set up. This is a little one-man tent, and I sleep on my side. It's barely enough room for me and an air mattress and, you know, a couple of other things. So I got it set up. And one of the things I always try to do when I'm out like this, I try and look for a spot where if I was Bigfoot and I was curious and I wanted to watch somebody, where would I watch them from? I look for those spots intentionally and set my tent up there. Some people call that bait. I'm okay with that. So I had picked my spot, and I was out behind it picking up trash, and my friend came over with me, and she was helping me pick up trash, and we were just talking. And I noticed back behind my tent, probably where we were, probably about 25 yards or 30 yards in, there was this huge old-growth tree that had rotted and fallen over. Behind that, probably about another 20 feet, was what I would call the woods, where if you take three steps back into the mountain laurels and stand there, nobody's going to know you were there. You will disappear. And so we're picking up trash and talking and walking, and we got trash finished, picked it up, went back. They went, progressed. We, you know, walked through the woods, did a little bit of stuff. And nighttime came on, so we were sitting around the campfire. We'd had our evening meal, and it was getting late, and people were starting to drift off to their tents, and there were maybe four or five of us left at the fire, including my Native American friend. I've been around her long enough to know she has certain phrases that she uses that have a special meaning. One of those is, I think I'm going to take a walk. Because that usually means, I think we got company. So we're sitting around the fire, and I hear her say, I think I'm going to take a walk. So right away, I'm like, okay. I'm interested. I said, can I go with you? And she said, sure, come on, let's go. So we start walking. Now, this is in the dark Georgia woods. This is the dark like you only get in the night with no moon in the middle of North Georgia. I can't see squat. I got no flashlight. She's got no flashlight. We got no headlamps, no nothing. She takes off walking, and she's walking through these woods like she's got built-in FLIR. And I'm struggling along behind her, trying to keep up with her, you know, not step on a root ball and break my ankle or something. And so I get to the point where I notice she's heading back behind my tent. This is interesting. Okay. So she gets to the big fallen tree and she stops. And I stop beside of her. I can see, having been there during the daylight, I remember where the trees are. That's one thing I always try and do is scope out an area during the day so I can go, okay, that's a rock, that's a tree, that's a bush. So when the night comes, you know what's already there. So I had that kind of mental map, and I'm standing there looking beside of her, and I could see where the woods that I put at the starts. There's a couple of big trees standing there, and I hear her say, they're coming. They're coming. And I'm thinking, okay, here we go. And I hear her say, oh, they're here. Oh, they're here. Oh my gosh, look at this. Oh, there's a big male. Oh, and there's a young one. Oh, and there's a little girl. Oh, you're so cute. Aren't you so cute? And she's talking to him. Oh, you're so cute. I see you. Oh. Now I'm standing there and I'm not seeing anything. It's dark. And I'm thinking, okay. I know this woman really well. There's a term in Native American language called medicine. Medicine means something completely different than it does to us Westerners in the Native American culture. This woman's got medicine. I have seen things happen around her that you just look at it and it's like, how did that just happen? How did you know I was sitting here? How did you know? So I'm standing there beside of her, and I'm thinking, I don't see anything, but I trust this woman. I don't know what's going on. So, okay. And she's continuing to talk to him, and I just lean over and say, I can't really see him like you are. I don't see anything. And she leans back and says, well, you're not supposed to right now. At that point, I almost had to make the old Scooby-Doo noise. Because that was like, okay, let's see what happens. And I said, well, can I talk to him? And she said, sure, tell him your name. And I said, okay. I'm thinking probably just me talking to the dark, but here goes. I said, hi, guys, I'm Terry. I'm here with my friend and don't mean any harm. I'm not going to come any closer. Just curious about you guys and just want to learn more, and I hope that's okay. And I can't really see her or see you the way my friend can, but I just wanted to let you know, out of respect, I mean no harm, and you know I'm not going to come any closer. And so, okay. So she starts talking to him again, and I'm seeing nothing, and I'm thinking, this is just really strange. I'm going nuts, but okay. And then I hear her say, okay, oh, they're leaving. They're leaving. Yeah, be careful. I see you. Be careful. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you. Okay, they're gone. And I said, okay. So we start walking back towards where my tent was. And my head's spinning. I mean, I am spinning like a Ferris wheel at this point. So I get to my tent, and I just said, I said to my friend, you know, it's been a long drive. I'm going to turn in if that's okay. I'm just going to crawl in and get some sleep, and I'll see you in the morning. We'll have breakfast. And she said, oh yeah, no problem. So she goes on off. I crawl in my tent. Usually when I'm out like this, I have a little small, digital recorder that I turn on and just leave on all night just in case. Usually it just gets me snoring, but sometimes you get stuff. This particular time, for whatever reason, I didn't turn it on, and probably because my head was just swimming. So I crawl in my tent, and I'm laying there on my side, and I'm thinking, what in the heck just happened? I don't know. Is she crazy? Am I crazy? I don't know what's going on. And from behind my tent, back where we had just come from, I hear, whoop. And it's getting louder. So at this point, my brain is going into overdrive, and it's like, this is not happening. This is absolutely not happening. I am losing my mind. There is a Bigfoot walking up behind my tent. This was, I've heard squirrels and chipmunks jump around in the woods, in the leaves, and they can make you think it's people, but this was not that. This was heavy, heavy footfalls. And it's getting closer. If Andre the Giant had strapped cinder blocks onto his feet and stomped around, that's close to what this would have sounded like. And it comes right up behind the corner of my tent and stops. So now I'm laying there like, okay, I'm dead. There's a Bigfoot standing behind my tent. I this is nuts, but there's something standing behind my tent. I can hear him. He's standing behind my tent. What am I going to do? What's he going to do? He's going to carry me off like, you know, like the guy you hear about, the Otzman story where he kidnaps somebody. He's going to carry me off in this tent like a burrito. I'm done for. And behind my tent, I hear like a sigh, like, what am I going to do with this one? So I hear that and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. There's nothing I can do. What's he going to do? What am I going to do? And it dawns on me, well, there's nothing I can do at this point. And he's not doing anything to me. And at that point, I feel through my tent wall a finger. This was not a stick. This was not a dog's nose. This was a finger, about two fingers worth. If I hold up two fingers of my hand, it's about that big. You could feel the nail on the end of it. Pokes through into my tent wall and pokes me square in the shoulder. At this point, I'm just completely freaking out. It's like, oh my gosh, there's a Bigfoot poking me in the shoulder. this, it, what's going to happen? What's going on? He's going to, what? And it dawns on me again, Terry, he's not doing anything. There's nothing you can do, and he's not doing anything. He's poking you in the shoulder. This is so cool. Bigfoot's poking me in the shoulder through my tent. This is amazing. This is unbelievable. Oh, my gosh, this is fantastic. This is so cool. And about that point, I feel the finger go whoop, back out. And the creepiest part is, well, not creepy, but the weirdest part is, I never heard him leave. He's just gone. He's just like he vanished. At that point, I'm just laying there. I'm like, again, like giggling like a little girl in my tent. Like, this is so cool. Bigfoot poked me in the shoulder. Oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. I went to sleep. I slept probably one of the best sleeps in the woods I've ever had. Got up the next morning, came flying out of the tent. There were people sitting around the fire. And I was like, yo, you guys aren't going to believe this. I got to tell you this story. What happened? Oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. Bigfoot poked me in the shoulder. This is so amazing. So I chat with them a little bit. And one of them, I said, I never heard him leave, but I heard these footsteps. Well, another one said, well, that's because he wanted you to hear him. He was introducing himself because you were respectful and he wanted you to know that he was there. And I said, but I never heard him leave. And they said, yeah. And it's like, okay, well, I got nothing there. So I went back behind my tent, thinking, let me look and see if I can find any footprints or any evidence of anything. Let me walk around back here. Unfortunately, the ground that we were on was hard-packed Georgia clay covered in pine needles. So there really wasn't anything definitive. There were a couple little spots that I could, in my imagination, say maybe something scuffed this up, but nothing I could point to and say, yeah, that's a footprint or that's a, you know, whatever. So that's the story on that one. That one kind of changed my attitude on things about being afraid of them. You know, he could have picked me up at any point. He could have ripped through that little taffeta tent, eaten my head off if he wanted to. He could have packed me up like a burrito over his shoulder and carried me off somewhere. He could have stomped on me, but he didn't. He had every opportunity to, but he didn't. So, again, I think that goes back to the respect thing. You know, and back to what I said earlier about being in the woods, don't take chances. Listen to the little voice in your head. And if something does happen, well, what are you doing that might have caused that? And what can you do to alleviate that? And again, anybody can have a bad day. But I've kind of changed the way I look at things a little bit since then. I'm still cautious, but I'm still respectful. And again, like I mentioned earlier, I don't want to go where I'm not wanted because that's how you get in trouble. So that's the story on that one. So far, that's probably next to the electricity story. I think that one's still probably my top one because that was what changed my attitude on everything.
It is interesting, though, about the no recorder situation. You just forgot. You had a lot going on. And I wonder, now besides the whole, as you mentioned before, someone comes into your house, they hang a picture, you're going to notice it. Besides that, you know, laying it out, you know, in a tree or laying it out by your tent, besides them just physically seeing it, I wonder then also if they can even somehow sense something as small as a recorder, the tiny amount of energy that's being pulled from those batteries just to run a recorder like that.
I wonder about that myself. I sort of suspect that they do. I have heard from people who claim to have them around their houses, like my friend. Her take on this is video, not so much. They don't like that. Recorders, they're usually okay with that. Audio recorders. But according to her, if they don't want them to work, they won't work. I've actually had an incident of that happen in the Uwari. I was shooting an interview. I do video work as well. I was shooting an interview in the field up in Uwari for a couple of friends of mine back at base camp, checked out my camera gear. Everything worked, fresh batteries. All the gear was good. Went down into this field, got set up, turned my camera on. I got an error message on my camera that I have never seen before, have no idea what it was, and have not been able to repeat it since. I tried that twice. And it didn't do anything. It just shut down. So I just said out loud out of desperation, all right, guys, we're not here to film you. We're just here to film these people in front of me. We're not looking for you guys. I tried it again. The camera came on. I got nothing on that one as well. Same thing happened to one of the interviewers there, or one of the interviewees there, rather. I'm sorry. He had a FLIR scope and worked perfectly back at base camp. He got in, turned it on when he was in there. Nothing. It died. He tried it twice. It died. So we just went on, shot the interview. All during the interview, you can see we were hearing something. We were in the clearing right on the edge of the woods where the tree line is. You could hear something off to the side of us. And you could actually see them in the interview kind of glance it over every now and then to the side. Don't know what it was at that point. We were just thinking, well, who knows? You know, everybody knows Uwari is a Bigfoot place, so who knows who it is stomping. But coming out, we had a rock thrown at us, and or toward us. We had two of them, actually. We were leaving, and we packed up, and we're walking out this little cut-through out to the Forestry Service Road to go back to our base camp. There were four of us in a line going out. It was this one person that I was interviewing. It was her first time out with something like this, and all of a sudden, we hear coming through the trees, ka-chunk, 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 flop. And this big rock lands right in front of her. She was first in line, and she's freaking out at this point. And I said, no, don't, just keep going. Keep going. Don't worry about it. So we're going through a little further, and we hear another one, chunk, 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 flop, back behind us, the last person walking out. So I just kind of looked over and said, okay, we're out of here. We get it. I hope we didn't disturb you. But I somehow or another, the whole electronics thing, there is something going on. I don't understand it. I can't explain it. There is something going on there. Whether they can sense it, whether they can actually influence it, I don't know. But I've had that experience. I've never been able to duplicate it in, you know, on the bench. I have no clue what that was about.
Now, Terry, in relation to the tent incident, the thought was the next day you tell your fellow campers and they say this is not luck of the draw. And it was because of the fact that you were standing there and you kind of talked out loud and you were respectful that it then came in and it gave you this kind of approval poke, essentially, right? Well, what if, and this is just conjecture, but what if another one of your fellow campers was standing beside her that night and said, I'm good. I don't really need to say nothing to them. We're good. Like, do you think just nothing would have happened at all to anybody? Do you think that you maybe it was luck with the draw, or that was directly in relation to the fact that you did say your little piece to them that night?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't want to sound self-important by any means, so I'm going to say this with all modesty. I have been told by the folks of this group that I was tagged that night. That means that once one of them knows you, they all know you. Now, I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. I do think being respectful makes a difference. I think somehow they understand and or appreciate that. So if someone else had acted differently, who's to say? I don't know. But I do think respect goes a long way. I mean, in fact, that's part of my Rock Hill Bigfoot logo. And my friend, my Native American friend, has a saying that she always closes her talks with that I'll be glad to share with you, is as long as there's respect between us, there'll be no problems. And I'm starting to learn there's some truth to that. I don't know that holds true everywhere for everyone, but I do think it goes a long way. If you show them somehow, I think they can tell. These are not dumb apes like a lot of people think they are. These creatures have intelligence, possibly up to and beyond what we have and can understand. So I think they sense whether you're there with malice in your heart or whether you're truly just curious or whether you just stumbled into their bedding area or something accidentally. I think they can figure that out. And I think that does make a difference.
Well, I know that from your email, you're going to be going to an area in South Carolina that has some possible Bigfoot activity that you're going to be researching. So if anything goes down out there, let me know. I'd love to have you back on, especially between that and the fact that you still go out. I mean, you go out all the time. So you are welcome back anytime. And Terry, before we go, did you want to plug your website?
I really don't even have a website. It's you can find me on social media. Just Google Rock Hill Bigfoot on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. But truly, I don't have a lot of stuff there. Like I said, I'm really not out to prove to anybody else what goes on. It's mostly just a way for me to keep up with what I do. I'm happy to share what little knowledge I pick up along the way, because if it can help somebody else, I'm happy to do that. And, you know, I was the newbie at one point. I'm not saying I'm anywhere near an expert at this, but I'm always happy to share. And, you know, I'm happy to have been here with you today. I hope your listeners enjoyed it and got something out of it. And I'll be happy to come back anytime.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bar. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our ignorance and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. Sheridan has the same idea in his poem, The Four Quartets, where he says, when you settle down in the train to read your newspaper and so on, you are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.